Dave. So record to cloud. All right, we're recording.
Okay, well, welcome to the January 12th, 2021 session of Tangerine SDR and Ham Size Personal Space Weather Station Working Group. My name is Dave, KV0S. And this week, I was reorganizing some computer stuff and reinstalling some software things. I didn't get a huge amount of programming, but I actually did get back to my working on communication, local communication program to solve my three radio problem. I have a nice piece of software, but it only detects three radios regardless of how many radios I have turned on. In previous work, I only ever had one or two radios on, so I didn't notice it. But when we started with this, I made a simulator, turned on a whole bunch of them, and the software only detected the first three. So I've been working on that. I have a solution, and I now need to just go back through and reprogram that. So that's my programming stuff. My magnetometer is up and running. It's been running fine, and I do have it back outside, and no water problems, and it's cranking along. So I have more log files to add to the collection. I did get some stuff from John Gibbons, so thank him for that. And so that's the week for me. Next on the list, we have Nathaniel into NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Thank you very much, Dave. It has been a busy week for me, as usual. Some highlights. So one thing I wanted to say is Veronica now has her antenna put up. And so she's supposed to stop by my house tomorrow afternoon. And I will lend her an IC7300. And I will give her the grape, John. So her grape should be running by the end of the week, or she'll at least contact you so she can get that set up. Also, John, I have right here in a box with your address on it, the other grape to send back to you, which I was supposed to drop off at the university today to our admin assistant who's supposed to mail it to you. But guess what I forgot to bring with me when I went down to the campus. So it will get there. Next, I'm working on debricking one of my two Edis USRPs. I configured it to work on the campus network, and then I brought it here and I wanted to connect it, just reset it back to normal. And I tried flashing it the way they said to on the Edis website, and now we can't seem to get it to go back to normal. Not sure what's going on there. And finally, I want to introduce Benjamin Douglas, who's on the call tonight. And he can give more of an introduction to himself. But basically, Ben is a computer science student at Ursinus College, and he is an Eagle Scout from my scout troop. And he just got his Eagle Scout 2 years ago, recently?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. And he just emailed me about a day or so ago saying, I'm a computer science student. Your project looks interesting. I really don't know anything about ham radio, but I wanted to try and get involved. So if someone has a good idea of a computer coding project we can give to Ben that he can play around with and do something useful for the project, we are open to suggestions. So that's it. Back to now.
I will mention one other thing that Nathaniel and I worked on this week is we made contact with the other magnetometer project, and we have permission to use the Columbia magnetometer when its data is available and share. And of course, we'll share our data with them once we have it someplace available. So next on the list is Dave Witten, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. I've been working on code when I can and between interruptions, but making progress much more slowly than I had anticipated. back, you know, just trying to make everything compliant with the standard that John and Bill have has required rewriting big chunks of it. And the examples being in C++, surprisingly more work to translate from C++ to C than the other way around. And so everything's been just going slowly, but that's what I'm doing. I'm not collecting any data because I have my stuff completely offline, so I have something to work with.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. Next on the list is John. I can't remember his skull sign. Go ahead, John Gibbons.
November 8, Oscar Bravo Juliet.
Okay.
Been digging a little bit more into the Pi's issue with the sound dongle, and I've just become aware of some major, in fact, they just issued another OS kernel update this morning. So they're working on something that's got a problem, and it still hasn't resolved mine yet, but with the updates coming out about once a week now, they're on to something. So once that's resolved, I should be able to ship the other stations. In the meantime, I've been working on that thing that's flashing behind me, which is the clock for our station. Does that call sign look familiar, Nathaniel?
Oh, yeah.
You missed it.
Is my call sign there?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Cool. You have to push for it. It's a 4-inch LED clock that we're going to be putting two of in the ham shack at school. And nice. All written in Python code.
It shows up backwards on our screen.
Oh, because it shows up forwards on mine. So let me change that. Because I'm seeing it backwards now.
OBJ.
And there you are. There's EDU. And then there's...
It still shows up backwards here.
Still backwards?
Yeah, where's it still seeing it reversed?
Huh. Yeah. Oh, well, I haven't figured
it out. Didn't know you could reverse them.
Yes.
Yeah, you go under video settings and there's mirror my video, which I do there. But, oh, well, I couldn't figure that one out yet. Getting back to the topic at hand, I'm still trying to get that done so I get these other four stations shipped out. I also have been making some progress on the input filter and buffer amplifier to feed four antenna inputs for four radios. I've got a schematic sketched up. I actually found the mini circuits filter that Nathaniel was referring to that he had bought. They have a surface mount version of it on a little PC board for $30. So I picked one of those up. Yeah, it's a smaller version of that. It's actually a circuit element that you plop down and it's a surface mount part. And I'm going to just dissect it and change it from 2 to 30 down to 2 to 16 megahertz and then build that into the front end. And then that'll feed the main amplifier. And then that'll go off to the tree of four buffer amps that feed my four radios simultaneously. So that's what I'm actively working on now. Back to Ned.
Very good. And next on the list is Ben Douglas. Introduce yourself and let us know what you want to work on.
All right, so hello, I'm Ben. Dr. Frizzell said, I'm a computer science major at Ursinus College in Pennsylvania. I heard about your guys' project through contacts with the troop and Dr. Frizzell. I'm not sure, I don't know a lot about ham radio or anything, but I know some stuff about computer science and I would love to be helpful in any way that I can.
Yep. What's your favorite programming languages?
So at the moment, I'm most comfortable in C++.
Okay.
Ooh.
And I'm gonna.
John can make use of that.
You better run.
And I'm gonna be starting to learn Python this semester.
Okay.
Well,
good. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I will tell you, I'm the middle of a three-generation Eagle Scout family.
Oh, nice.
So both my father and my son and myself are...
Congratulations.
We've all been Eagle Scouts, so... Or it's been a few years since I actually did that. Anyway, down the list, the next on the list is Dave, N1HAC. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello, everyone. Things I've been working on,
finding a box to put my Bardington magnetometer in so I can set it out along with the Magpie magnetometer. Setting up VLF loops that are, they're kind of old, so the wires are kind of ratty, so I have to work through that and figure out how I'm going to digitize that. And at some point, I think someone needs to talk about how we're going to collect various forms of data and collate them. Because, like, for instance, this magnetometer of mine, I can collect log files, but they're not in the same format as our other magnetometer. And one thing I'll say as an aside is that our local ham radio group, Twin State Radio Club, our educational committee, shall I say, is actually working with our local scouts and trying to get a whole bunch of them licensed, both the adults and the scouts themselves. So that's a big project for us right now. Though we're not able to do it in person because of COVID, so we're working with New England SciTech to do the online testing with these guys. But we're doing online courses.
Done?
Done.
Okay. Next on the list, we have Gary, AF8A. Go ahead, Gary.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Hello. Just checking in and out tonight, and carry on.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Homan. Go ahead, Homan.
Hi, good evening. So I just received a magnetometer sensor assembly from Jules. So hopefully I can get it set up at Jenny Jump sometime soon. Hopefully I can expedite my progress more a little bit this week or the coming weeks. It's been going a little bit slowly from my side, but hopefully things are getting faster after this. So otherwise, yep, I'm still working on the documentation, and I'll be working on the magnetometer installation soon. So that's from my side.
Very good. Next on the list, we have Jay, WB8SBI. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. First of all, the bad news, in case anybody hasn't heard, the Dayton Hamvention is officially canceled for this year.
Yeah.
Bummer, dude. death to the virus is all I can say. Last time I participated here, which I think was in December, there was talking about distributing the sensors around the country to, I believe they have to go in the ground or should go in the ground and for taking readings, and that interested me. So I'd like to offer that as a site here. I'm in the northern suburbs of the city of Detroit. And the only thing that would concern me directly is that in my backyard where I would put it, there's a big power transformer, which goes from, 4,000 volts down to 220 volts and feeds about a dozen houses. So that would be the only question I have of, will this thing still produce usable data when it's sitting less than 100 feet from that big transformer? Other than that, my email, I'm on the email list for this group. So please, whoever, I would like to volunteer for that or to talk about it. You have my email. Please get in touch with me.
Yeah, Scotty is the one who has those boards, and Nathaniel is also in controlling those, as his project is paying for them. I don't know. I know Jules and I and Dave are finding small issues that don't quite work yet. So I don't know what the status is.
Okay, no problem. But just keep me in mind with you'd like a site up here in the northern suburbs of Detroit, Michigan. Keep me in mind, please.
Well, we've had like three people in your general vicinity because Michael down there, AAK, is north of you. And then
what
we had Michael, where are you?
Oh, yeah. He's, 100 miles away from me, was it?
Right. And then
about 100 miles north of me.
We had a VE3 that was from just east of you, right?
Well, depending upon what part of Canada, because if you go to the city of Windsor, Canada, they're actually geographically the only point in Canada that is lower than that is south of a yes. point in the 48 states.
Well, this guy was east of Michael, wasn't he?
Well, if it was east, it would be at least 100 miles
yes.
Away from where I am.
So I just thought I'd mention that. So there, we have a cluster.
Yeah. And other ham radio news. I worked Kenya on 20 meters FT8, 40 watts ground mounted vertical.
Well, you know, every once in a while, I work Whisper a lot, and every once in a while I get an odd one. And yesterday I got Ethiopia, and I said,
ooh.
Really, Ethiopia? But it was a French ooh. Call sign.
Doesn't matter, Ethiopia, that's rare.
Yes. I'd never gotten any kind of contact with Ethiopia before. So that was
not too many people have.
Yes.
Oh, keep Logbook of the World updated.
Yes, that's right. Next on the list, let's see, is Jim 7J1AJH. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, good morning. Just curious. Thanks.
Okay. Back to you. And next would be
where is 7 Juliet 1 land?
Japan.
Oh,
really?
So you don't have an accent.
I'm also AI-8A, so
okay.
So next we have Jonathan KC3EEY. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hi, everybody. I've been playing with the my evaluation board for the ADD converter, and I've run into some problems. Apparently, the USB audio interface is pre-programmed in a way to allow the evaluation software to configure the ADD converter, and it does not work as a regular sound card when you plug it in. That's a function of the USB audio interface, but apparently TI will not release any of the juicy information that I need to possibly upload new firmware to the USB audio interface. So I'm going to see if I could dig deeper and see if I could get some more information on the other half of the board. So the evaluation board is a USB audio interface and XMOS processor and the TI ADD converter. That's a plug-in daughter board. And it does not work as a regular sound card. You have to put it in active mode in Windows, and then it will act as a regular sound card. That will configure it, but you need the evaluation software, which only runs in Windows. There's a Mac version, but it doesn't download the specific application for my board. So I have to figure out how I'm going to proceed, because what I wanted to do was I wanted to capture some WAV files and plot them. What I really wanted to do was I wanted to connect it to my pulse per second signal from my GPS to see how well I could do timing information. But right now there is no hope for it to work with ALSA or OSS drivers. So I need to figure out a way to do that. Other than that, I got my AM stereo Part 15 transmitter almost assembled. The fellow who designed it, unfortunately had cancer, and he unfortunately passed away a couple weeks ago. But before he did, he released the artwork for his PCB, and he made some YouTube videos and some build documentation, and I was able to get one of the boards mostly assembled. I'm just waiting for a couple parts, but that was in honor of him. And I've always wanted one of these anyway. So, but anyway, other than that, I don't have anything else. Back to the net.
Well, fine business. And next on the list, we have Jules K2KJJ. Go ahead, Jules.
Okay, thanks, guys. My project for this past week was to complete the assembly of a magnetometer unit for Homan. Homan, if you have it handy, you might hold it up to the camera so people could see what it looks like. And then the other piece was to make use of the information John Gibbon sent me on file standards and start incorporating that in my Python code for the magnetometers here so I can create decent files. And hopefully we'll finish that up this coming week. And then I can start to actually collect well-structured files in that sense. That's it from here.
Say, Jules, any comment on Jay's transformer in the backyard?
Yeah, the only thing I was going to mention was some experience I had about 40 years ago with measuring E fields and H fields near a 1 megawatt transformer in a vault out at Caltech next to a lab we were working in where we were collecting microvolt level data from houseflies, and really couldn't find anything. Our fields from the overhead fluorescent lamps were much much worse than the fields from that 1 megawatt transformer. So I'm saying if you're 100 feet away, those things are designed for pretty high efficiency and to keep those fields internal. So I would think you're probably okay.
Very good.
Okay. Ship the stuff up to me and let's get it operational.
Okay.
And we will make every effort not to let the smoke out.
Yes. Well, you also don't want to let the water in.
we would want to waterproof it. But yes. My house here, I'm above the water table.
Yeah.
The only thing I have to worry about here is precipitation.
Yes.
Don't have to worry about groundwater.
Yep. Okay, next on the list, we have Michael, AAAK. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, London would be, the most direct route here would be a couple hour drive.
Fine business. And let's see, Michael, which is KG4DSG. Isn't that James?
Yeah, I actually go by both. Greetings to the net. I just got the email as the conference started about Hamvention failing, but I posted a link to the QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo. They ran one in the middle of summer last year. It was actually pretty good. So if you're looking for something to do in May, there's one online. And with that, back to the net.
Fine business. And next on the list, we don't have Scotty tonight. I did see Scotty.
He's doing okay, I think.
Where is he?
He just popped on.
Oh, he popped in at the bottom. Well,
he's watching a game.
Let's get Tom first. We're going to get Tom McDermott in 5EG and have him talk so he isn't the last.
Oh, what a novelty. I've got the prototype working of the GUI to set and read the registers on the receiver module, the ASIC registers and the module registers. And I need to talk to Scotty and maybe Bill to see if we've documented a protocol for doing that, or if we need to get together and put something together. So it's all done in WX Python. And later on, if we have time, I can do about a 1 minute demo of what it looks like. Back to the net.
Fine business. So Scotty, are you there? Can you talk? I don't see a mic there.
So Scotty says he's logged in on a tablet at the restaurant watching the game. Can't hear, okay. It's too loud in here. But okay. It sounds like he's doing okay.
Yes. he's out at a restaurant.
Yeah.
in the
but
middle.
Scotty's incredibly dedicated.
A COVID flare in Phoenix.
Well, he's already had COVID. So
he's already had it.
Should be good for a little while.
So, well,
yeah.
So,
I guess
now we're open for general discussion.
So, I'd like to show what Jules sent me yesterday. So, this is the unit. This long, and the bottom is completely sealed. The top has bubble level, so you can make it leveled. And there's a connector port that is supposed to be watertight or waterproof. And he sent me the piece of cable so I can replace that cable with the real one. So what you have to do is to just connect, that's it. And I think the only job that you have to do is to put this guy into the ground, secure it, and level it with this level and rotate. He actually kindly enough to mark the north here. So basically you rotate this until you see, I guess, zero or close to zero in Y axis. This is X, Y, and Z. So you rotate this in a horizontal plane until you see the minimum Y or ideally zero Y. That way this line points toward the geomagnetic north. So that would be the only job that you guys have to do.
Yeah.
And that will be included in the documentation. My question for Jules is that everything seems to be complete sealed. So we don't have any access to the sensor in case we have
Well, actually I've used silicone rubber. So it's not a PVC glue, and you can actually with some, a little bit of force, remove all of those external pieces and remove the sensor to get access to it. So the bottom plug, the easiest way is to remove the bottom plug, but everything is siliconed in place. So it is well sealed, but it's not permanently glued.
Okay. And this is how we're going to deliver to those who would want to install magnetometer in their backyard?
Well, it's one way of making it, but I think the group has to decide how we're going to distribute information, whether instructions that you're preparing are sufficient with a material list, or whether there's going to be an option of completed sensors at some point.
So what's your opinion, guys? I don't know.
So I have a question for Jules. Is this the one where you have actually milled grooves in the side of the PVC, or is this the one we're using foam to?
Nope. Actually, what I've done with this was I took some Plastruct hobby construction material. These are forms like channels and angle stock and so on. And I used, I think it's either the 3/32 or the 1/8 Plastruct channel, which is just wide enough to accept the edge of the board. I cut a couple of pieces of those, held it to the board, laid the board in the pipe, and just used some plastic cement to glue the channels in place, pulled the board out, made sure the joints were good on those channels, and that's my guide. That actually holds everything in place without the foam. But the reason for doing that was to try to keep it from moving relative to the north line. So that kind of, that sets the orientation that even if you hit the thing or vibrate it or whatever, it's not going to move it.
Where is the sensor?
Right at the bottom, about the board starts about 1.5 inches from the bottom, and it's the length of the board, which is 3 inches roughly. It's a Scotty board. So the sensor is about the z-axis, or what's the actual z-axis sensor on the board, which is now the x-axis sensor, is about 2.5 inches up from the bottom of the board, on bottom of the tube, rather.
Is that a Scotty board with the connector rotated?
That's correct. And what I've done is just use a standard jumper, a standard Cat5 jumper, to go from the board connector up to the other side of that waterproof connector at the top, coiled it a little bit, so with a little bit of a springy, it just took up the extra length of the cable. And then what I did, however, was I removed, because Scotty didn't have a board without the 40-pin header. So to get it in there, I took the 40-pin header off, so now I'm working directly with the edges of the board, and that's what's sitting in those channels. It's a perfect fit in a 1.5-inch pipe.
Yes.
So the idea is that the sensor is located below the ground so that you know, it can experience minimum temperature change.
So you're going to be with that, typically you're going to be 20 inches, 24 inches below ground, roughly.
Yep. So maybe about this much is going to stick out of the ground.
Well, actually, I would advise maybe letting, well, it depends how deep you can dig the hole.
Yeah.
But you could, you know, below that T connector, you could have ground level about 2 or 3 inches below that. Yeah, about there, maybe even a little higher. And yeah, that'd be fine. And that should be good. If you want to, you could put, I don't know how protected your area is, but you could put something around it, leaves or hay or something, if you wanted to protect it against any snow buildup. But even the snow buildup shouldn't hurt it either.
Sure. Yeah.
I know in Ohio, our frost line is 30 inches. So I'm going to planning on putting mine down 36 inches.
Yeah, well here, yeah, that's, it also depends upon how close you are to a building, what kind of ground cover you have. It could vary anywhere from 18 to 30 some inches, depending upon a lot of factors, but you might as well put it down below frost level.
Yeah. And, based on from the well system at my house, I recently learned that the frost line here in Pennsylvania in the mountains is about 4 feet.
Uh-huh. There's a very good civil engineering article on frost depth in the Northeast that I can pass on to the net at some point. If you're interested, they detailed quite a variety of test sites all over the Northeast. And I think it included New Jersey, actually. So anyway, I'll put that out and you can gather what information that it is of interest to you from that.
That's a nice looking job there, Jules.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're very nice. Looks very solid, very reliable, and should be really easy to work around. So I guess this could be a standard model for...
So is this one going to Jenny Jump?
Yes, that's my plan.
Okay.
Because I've had a station that's supposed to go to Jenny Jump as well. So I guess, who do I talk to, Nathaniel?
For the grape? I thought one grape was going to Jenny Jump and the other one was actually going to NJIT campus. It's probably more valuable at Jenny Jump. That's okay. A more radio quiet area.
I haven't checked that one yet.
You can talk to either Hyoman or to Gareth.
Okay, Gareth was the one. Okay, now it's making sense. Okay.
Yeah. Gareth does more with the Ham Radio Club on campus, and Hyoman does more with Jenny Jump, I think.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I do some with Jenny Jump as well.
Okay.
So well, I can actually...
I'll ask the question again when I'm ready to ship.
That sounds good. Yeah.
I have a question for Jules. Have you had access to the Python and the C++ code that I've written already for all the file creation and header creation stuff?
Sorry. I haven't had that, John.
Because I've written all that already and it all works.
Okay. If you want to pass it on, I appreciate it.
Okay. Can do.
And Dave, just a comment on the Scotty board, the regular board that has the thing coming off at 98, not at the 90, at the axial location, but 90 degrees to that off the side. I did do one version of that where I actually soldered to the solder pads on the bottom of the connector, the lead that went up to the top of the waterproof connector. And then instead of removing the 40-pin header, I glued a small block on the opposite side of the board that was at the same height as the 40-pin header, and then mounted that on a little sheet of plastic that basically gave me a base to let it sit in the pipe, and then put foam over that that held everything in place. That way I didn't have to do any serious modification of the board, just some basically super gluing in some spacers and just some tack soldering in of the extension wire to the existing solder pads on that connector without damaging anything.
Yes,
so that's another way to do it. That fit in a 2.5-inch pipe.
I'm using that board in a 3-inch pipe with a pool noodle cut. I cut a piece below the board. Then I had a small piece of foam that I form fit around the board, and then I had another piece of pool noodle above the board. So
yeah, that'll work just as long as it's something that holds it firmly in place,
right,
and essentially aligned with the long axis of the pipe. So you know, if you get the pipe perpendicular to, then you, everything's aligned inside, and you just have to do the Y alignment, as Heilman points out.
Yep.
So yeah, no, that sounds, that should work great.
That's the setup I have out there right now. But,
Jules.
Yes.
I'm, this is Dave Whitten, and I'm likely to make something much closer to what Heilman has there for myself once I get some time, because I think that's looking like a very good design. You know, it's headed in the right way, direction for sure. That looks like it really, it starts to be something that people could work with. I'll probably try to make one myself like that.
Good enough. If you need some of my, the only real modification I did in terms of the standard fittings was I did some lathe work on the piece that fits in the side of the T-fitting that the waterproof connector is attached to, or that, uh-huh, I should say it's cut into. I had to cut that down a bit, bore a hole, and then do a little filing work, because it's more of a round, partially round hole with straight sides that lock the connector, yes, in place.
Uh-huh. I got you.
It took me only about 5 minutes to do the filing, but the lathe work was a little longer.
I was thinking about doing if I really got ambitious, to fire up my 3D printer and make a couple of pieces.
That'd work.
Some of these things too, but I don't know that I could do them for any significant number of people.
Well, you could post the plans.
That I can do. And I like doing that, but...
Yeah, and if you used a larger diameter pipe, as KV0DS did, KV0S rather, it's actually simpler. You really don't have to do the lathe work, because there's more space to get your fingers inside that T-fitting to plug in and unplug the connector, the extension wire connector to the backside of that waterproof connector. So you might have to smooth off with a file the face of the plug that fits into that, and then just bore. If you use a multi-step a hole cutting tool, you can get those easily at the hardware store.
A step drill sort of thing.
Drill works perfect for that. You just have to make sure it's centered, and then with a larger diameter pipe, you got a lot of working room.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you can do wonderful things with a step drill and PVC pipe and a few things that aren't very hard to come by. I think any place that has a hardware store probably has those items, and that's a kind of a design criteria I'd like to go towards too, is make sure these things are available to people.
Yeah, and a good grade of silicon rubber, GE is great. I mean, it works very well.
Jules, one question for you. Have you gone to the GitHub repository for the PSWS? Because all of my code and everything is up there.
I have not, but I will. Okay, just send me the repository and I'll pop up there and look at it.
Okay.
I'd like to ask a question.
John, can you put a link to that so I can put it in the minutes?
Sure. That means I got to find
it. If you go to the HamSize GitHub,
that's where
John's parts are there.
Yeah.
So do you know, it's just GitHub/HamSize. So,
okay, I've got it. Thank you.
James had a question.
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question on this construction here. And I understand everything that's been discussed and sealing it from outside environment, but is it a concern, and has anybody addressed internal condensation, or is that just not a problem?
Well, I fortunately, my basement where I'm doing this work is very dry. I have two dehumidifiers going continuously, and they haven't been running at all this winter, and I'm looking at about a 30% relative humidity. But I do take silica gel desiccant packets and take about, these are the small ones that come in packages that do various things. I've heated them to make drive off any water. I keep them in a sealed jar, and I pop about four or five of those in each of the assemblies, which should take care of any possible condensation.
Okay.
Dave, if we have a couple minutes, can we talk about some ideas for a coding project for Ben?
Which Dave? Witten or me?
Well, I guess it's going to you because you're kind of net control.
Okay.
Well, I guess this is open discussion.
This is open. Well, with C++, obviously, John's got potential coding that he might have for him to do. With his Python, there are several things. We don't have Bill here tonight.
No, we don't.
So I'm sure Bill has some projects, too, that he could fit into.
John, what do you think?
I was thinking of trying to create some baseline code for the data collection stuff, because I'm not familiar with doing the I/O manipulation in C++. Being able to read a port on a bit or setting up a clock or an interrupt or stuff like that, that's a little above my pay grade for programming. It's really operating system specific because it would be on the Raspbian. So it's Linux based. I don't know what Ben's experience, if it's Linux or if it's Windows. They're pretty much two different beasts.
Yeah, so most of my experience has been on Windows.
Okay.
I just recently set up a computer with Linux, so I'm starting to get familiarized with that as well.
Okay.
Well, which Linux? I mean, there's several Linuxes, but...
Well, Raspbian is, and the stuff that I use is Debian based, so...
Yes.
Like Ubuntu.
It's very similar to Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got Ubuntu on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the for that purpose, the C++ and the C are essentially the same thing, you know, at that level of interaction, those lower levels. You just encapsulate the C and the C++, or just, you know, stick it in, it's in line. So it's not terribly difficult. For Raspbian, I came across a couple of good books on that are very up to date. In fact, one of them was printed the day, my copy was printed the day I ordered it. So I guess it came from over in Illinois, it came from the Amazon's print on demand thing. But there's a couple of titles that are very good for a Raspberry Pi 4, doing all the variants of I/O. It's really about the titles say they're for IoT, but it's for Internet of Things. But I think they'd be very useful if someone was looking to write some books. I'll put the titles in the chat.
Oh, perfect. Here. Perfect. I was going to ask if you could put a link to them.
Yeah, I don't have a link. Yeah. Well, you can get them as ebooks or as paperbacks or whatever you please, I think. Sure. And it's a part of a series. I haven't bought many books in a long time because so much of the documentation you really want's online. But this is useful in that one problem with Raspberry Pi stuff is there's now, for once, so much of it that being sure that what you're looking at is current and is correct for the devices we're actually working with is sometimes a bit of a pain. There's bugs in some of the things up to 3 that don't come up in 4, and there's, you know, I'll put those in there. And I think it covers, I don't know if it covers the ADDs, but it covers, you know, GPIO, I2C, SPI, and the general mindset of doing I/O programming on a Raspberry Pi. So there are good equivalents in Python if you're wanting to work that way as well, but you've already got that worked out for some of this stuff. So, but for someone getting going, I think I'll put those links in. I just sent them to.
Thank you, Dave. That'll be a big help.
Sure.
Well, and for Ben, Bill is working on a bunch of software that's all mostly C or Python. So your skill set should fit in both as you learn it and what you already know.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm happy to. I enjoy doing this, so I'll do a lot of research and learn what I can. Yep. So whatever I can do.
John, what exactly with the data collection, what exactly were you thinking of?
Well, it's the basic structure for not only grabbing the data off the A to D, probably off an I2C bus or a SPI bus, but the mechanism to look at a bit and then start the data collection, writing stuff to an IO file, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, like a wave file for continuous sampling or the once a second stuff. I have that already written in C++. But it's just the incorporation of some of these aspects that I'm not familiar with that ties it all together.
So the other place to look is on the Tangerine website for Dave Witten. He has a link to RunMag, and that has a lot of how to read I2C in C. And okay. So, and that code's up. Is it okay for people to look at that code, Dave?
Of course it is, but I must warn everybody that I probably will rework the I2C code in there once I get it works, but it's not quite I'm using file read and writing through file handles, and there's a better way, but that worked, and so that's what I did. These books, one of them at least, probably the Raspberry Pi IoT and C, which I've just stuck, either one of them, I don't know which book, but I just put the link in the chat, I just put the names of them, but just Google them and you'll get the link. That will make it, it's good to read the section, say, on I2C in there. It uses the BCM 2385 or whatever it is library calls. It does make it extremely non-portable to systems other than the Raspberry Pi, though, because that library is not available anywhere else. So that's great. All I have to say.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. Now, is the code I'm working on right now going to be used for anything? You've written Python code to read, or Jules is. I'm rewriting the code that we made for testing, but trying to make it more friendly. It's straight and it's in very straight C, but I'm wondering if anyone's really wants it.
I don't know if Bill has written anything or.
I thought he was talking about using C for this kind of task, and that was one of the reasons. But I don't know.
Yeah, my code that I wrote rewrote the module in FLDigi, I believe that was in C++.
Yeah. And I'm backporting that to C right now. I've had to do some kind of extreme surgery on some of what I did too to get them to go anywhere in the same direction. But I'm going to have that done, hopefully. I don't know, if somebody doesn't send me off on a wild goose chase tomorrow, I might even get some of it out there tomorrow. But I've got another repository I just haven't exposed to the world. But people kind of double-crossed me today.
Could you possibly put it on the HAMSci as a subdirectory, like I put my stuff there?
I would prefer to keep it where it is for a little while we're tested, and then we can do that.
Okay.
You know, then you can probably, you can fork it or something and have it up there. And, wait until I have gotten the worst of the most egregious bugs chased out of it.
Yeah, that won't be a problem. I'm pretty much buried with some other stuff. So,
okay.
Not a problem.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do things y'all's way. you know, but now the other code, the previous code works pretty well, I think. It's not perfect, but the, you know, the code that I've had out there, and it's on a GitHub, one of my GitHubs. And
I put the link down below, Dave, and it's the RunMag RM3100 RunMag directory.
Yeah. The new one's called Run RM3100, which may be too, I was trying to make it less confusing. I may have made it more so. But
I also have advice on using GitHub for a large group like this. I found through OpenHBSDR, we had an SVN and we put everybody in one repository with subdirectories. And when I tried to port that to GitHub, it was kind of a nightmare. It's all there, but and what has worked out better is each person have their own website, and then we have a place with links to where everybody's code is. But having multiple owners makes things a bit more confusing. So
I think ultimately we want the code all in one place. I certainly,
when it's released, I think that's fine, but to have code being developed with multiple users is really difficult.
If you're putting it in the same directory, I completely agree, but if they're keeping their own directory separate from everybody else, that's a little bit less of a nightmare.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to maintain.
It's more for backing it up. So, if, you know,
so it does take, it is a full-time job for whoever's the maintainer.
Oh, yeah.
To keep it all going.
It's no small task.
So, and we'll all have to be collaborators.
After working on a really big project and all the nightmares, I really don't want to get back into that.
Then they're
but
done.
I understand Nathaniel wanting to have it all in one place.
Yeah, eventually.
This is all the code. If you ever take a look at the Tapper GitHub, you can see all the different pieces of code. And each of the projects has three or four submitters. And it gets, it's very hard. Most of that is developed offline and then put there.
But wouldn't having, you know, in the main GitHub category, wouldn't having forks of the frozen code that's used at any given time in a project be one of the better ways to do it? Because that way it can be developed. It can be developed out of everybody's field of view, so people don't download the wrong stuff, you know, things that, because I routinely break all my code sooner or later and have to fix it.
I think that's really a good way to, I even do that myself. I have my personal GitHub and then I have a Hamsai one, and usually I only put things on the Hamsai after I've put it on my personal one and I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Really, it's only the releases that need to be out in the public website.
And that's what I set up on mine, are the first and second release of the software for all of the Grape One stuff.
Right.
And the documentation file and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's all up there. I'm going to have to make a quick break here, guys. So I'll say 7-3s. I will catch up with you all later. Stay healthy.
Well, and it's about the time I usually leave. So.
Yes, so you've made it till 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
7-3, John.
I would just got one quick question.
Would
there be, so it sounds like there might be something I could do. Is there somebody who could kind of just familiarize me, because it sounds like there's a ton of repositories floating around, which one I should be looking at in a little bit more in detail of what I could be helpful doing?
Well, I would say Nathaniel's your point of contact.
I think what we should do, Ben, is it sounded like John had some ideas for what you might be able to do. I think we should follow up with him on email after this or tomorrow sometime and try to get you like a more well-defined task.
Got it.
And then like if you need something like a Raspberry Pi or something like that, we can actually probably provide that to you.
Oh, okay, cool. That'd be awesome.
Developing on the machine you have set up will be very similar to what up working on the Raspberry Pi. The only thing with the Raspberry Pi, the space is just a little more limited.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah, but I think we have to know exactly what John is thinking of in terms of which sensors he wants you to pull from and that sort of thing. So yeah. I think if we follow up more with him, I think that's a good way to go.
I do think you're going to need a Raspberry Pi because even like my code, I develop it, but I sit at an Intel Linux machine, but I open an SSH terminal to the Raspberry Pi and I push everything to it and build it there because I squared C buses that are available on a Intel type machine are unrelated to those altogether that you would have on a Raspberry Pi, and so you really can't test it at all, and sometimes you can't even build it.
Yeah, Dave, I do the same thing here when I'm doing code. I build it on the Raspberry Pi directly.
Yeah, and there's some editors that can help with that, really. So, but I have a stack of them lying here. So,
well, I'm going to say 73 to everybody, and hope to meet everybody next week.
Thanks. Ben, are you available Thursday morning for the 10 a.m. telecon then?
Thursday morning, yeah, I am.
Okay, because that's actually we're all on there for about 2 hours, and that's the one, that's the Case Western one that John, so John is actually from Case Western Reserve University, so he's on that one as well.
Okay, great, cool, yeah. So I guess I'll reach out to you in the morning.
That sounds great.
Nathaniel, what does that Thursday morning two-hour one talk about?
The low-cost personal space weather station. I think you've been on that one before.
Not the Thursday morning. Usually on Thursday morning, I have a Society of Automotive Engineers cybersecurity committee meeting.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Thursday morning one's the low-cost Case Western team. And so I guess we're about done here. The other thing, we were mentioning this at the beginning of the session, we're going to start, I think, putting these telecon recordings onto a playlist on YouTube. I can't keep them on our university Zoom forever. They are actually deleting everything within a certain time frame because the university only has so much space to store videos and people just keep filling it up. And I'm especially guilty of this. So I had to pull my all of my recordings off of Zoom, and I have to move them elsewhere.
So as long as they're not in the great bit bucket in the sky,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, YouTube sounds like a plan.
Great. I think that's about it for today, then.
Great. Good 73, and stay safe, everybody.
73 to everybody. 73, see you next week.
73.
Thank you. 73, everyone.
Stay safe.
Thanks, guys. Night.